Hey, Smutters.
Hey, guys. What's clacking, lacking?
Wow. How's your week been?
Rainy.
It's been crazy weather, right?
It's rained all week.
It has been, and our poor dogs have
Then the thunder.
Yeah, 4th of July was just... Like, I don't want to sound like those people that, like, complain about it, but for our animals, it was awful. Like, I kind of dread 4th of July every year because our dogs are terrified of fireworks.
It's okay, though. You know, because, you know, the people that were out shooting fireworks till after midnight, I just, I just mowed our grass at 6 in the morning the next morning.
That's what you get. So, there have been some interesting things happen this week, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, guys, listen. Okay, one thing I do have to say. It is a little political, but it's really not. And it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you stand on, whether you're Republican, Democrat, like Trump, hate Trump. I don't really give a fuck. The thing is, how freaking hilarious is it that Hunter Biden goes and sees his dad at the White House, and then they take off to Camp David for the weekend, and then bam, fucking cocaine is found in the White House.
Wow, you went so political on that.
That's not political. That's anybody should laugh at that.
Okay. I was talking about something totally different.
That shit's funny, though.
Okay.
No, you gotta admit it is.
It is funny. No matter who it is, like,
that's why I said it. Yeah. It's not a political thing. It's
exactly.
That, well, I mean, we all know he's a crackhead. So, I mean, talking about it's not a big deal.
But yes, I was actually talking about the airplane.
Woman?
Yes. And a lot of people actually don't know about this. So,
well, I'm sure a lot of people do now.
Do you want to kind of tell the story about what happened?
No, you go ahead.
I feel like you've read more about it than I have.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, then. So basically, this woman is on an airplane and she starts flipping out, like wanting to get off the airplane, you know, leave her bags, doesn't care if she has them or not, but she wants off this plane. But the reason is the man sitting next to her, what was it? How he blinked or something?
Yeah, I think is what I heard.
From what I saw, the way he blinked was like a reptilian.
Went from left to right or something.
Yeah, it wasn't how we do. It was like from side to side. And she flipped her shit and she pitched a fit on that plane trying to get off. Did they end up letting her off, I wonder?
Yeah, I think she was escorted off.
Okay. Did it ever show the man?
I haven't seen anything yet.
I haven't seen the man.
I don't have TikTok, so I don't really...
I thought you did have TikTok.
I've got the app, but I don't know how to use it. I don't ever get on there or anything.
Okay. I looked at videos and what I could find. And it was mainly her just on the plane yelling. And this girl was terrified, y'all. And after this came out, like, a few days after, now they're saying it was a prank.
And it was no prank.
No, it was not a prank. It's them trying to cover it up is what it was. But this girl is, she's literally terrified of what she saw. And she's, like, yelling about the guy. She's like, that's not real. That's not real. And it's craziness.
Maybe the veil is thinning.
Yes, and I'm surprised that the guy's picture has not come out. I would really like to see the guy that she's talking about. But anyway, I thought it was kind of neat because, yeah, you're right. The veil is thinning. Things are starting to come to light, and the world is starting to see. Had they been on a plane and been like, oh, we saw a UFO fly next to us, I don't think anybody would really care, you know?
Yeah.
We hear that so much now that it's just...
Sorry. Sorry.
It's common now. Yeah. Like, people aren't surprised anymore with UFOs. So now it's upped to, we're starting to see reptilians now and aliens. And, you know, it's, what's it going to be next?
You know, I did see something someone pointed out on that woman on the plane. You know that devil worshiping sign where it's a goat with a pentagram?
The Baphomet, yeah.
He's got the two fingers up, two fingers down.
Yeah.
She did that while she was on the plane.
She did that?
Yeah, in one of the videos.
People notice so much.
It's like something like, you know, that's not normal.
No, that's not normal. But, like, the things that people notice just amaze me, because I was watching this video about, not, I say video, I mean reel. It's on Instagram, y'all. But it was a reel about Disney World and how evil it is. And it was very interesting. And it was basically, like, if you put Mickey Mouse's name and you put, reflected it in something for Mickey, it spells wicked. And just a bunch of stuff that, y'all, I never would have noticed this stuff on my own. You know it? It's just insane. And I had somebody send me a reel.
Turn this down real quick. I just want to show this to you.
Oh, okay.
They're kind of showing the video. See, she's got her two fingers out like that.
Uh-huh.
They're going to stop it in a minute. I'm just going to show you how she's holding it. I saw just a picture where it was side by side, you know?
Yeah.
I haven't seen this part yet, so... hold on. I don't know how long this is. You want me to try to find the picture of it? And
yeah, try to find the picture and we can post it so everybody else can see it. Get a screenshot of it if you can. So that's her getting up.
What I understand is, though, why everybody, like, the stewardess emptied the plane and then new stewardesses came back.
That's very strange.
Like, I don't know why they would put new stewardesses on.
That is weird. Like, there was no need for that. Unless that's just some kind of protocol with stewardess. I have no idea what the protocol is for something like that. But it is very weird. But also, like, you said something about her hands. Like, her standing there doing that. Just the end that you showed me. It made me think of, you know how they, like, demonstrate the seat belts and stuff when you're about to take off on a plane? The way they're, like, and the exits are here and here. You know? It just, the way she's using her hands.
Hold on. I'll try to find it.
Yeah, take a screenshot of it. And, guys, I'll try to post it for you so you can see it and do a side-by-side like you were saying. But tonight's story is pretty interesting. I looked up haunted rituals because we have not done a fun haunted ritual in a while, and I thought, you know what, maybe that's what we should do. And I found one. A new one just automatically popped up. And in order to do it, you have to live in Paris. So sorry. And the more I read about it, it was really cool. It's a really cool story to the game and everything. Well, turns out it started as a creepypasta, which, I'm sorry, I just found this out. But it's a very cool story. And then I found a story, because it's not very long, but then I found a story that a Reddit user redid and included Troy's favorite, the Casket Girls.
What?
And y'all, if y'all don't remember, because I believe I deleted that episode because he made me so mad on that episode. You can tell that I'm about to just lunge at him on that episode. The Casket Girls was one of my favorites because it was, you know, it was just a cool story about how vampires got to America and everything. And he poked holes in all of it. I think it was like our third episode. And I think I had tears in my eyes while we were talking about it. And I was so mad. So I deleted the episode. because I told him, I was like, yes, I want you to try to poke holes in whatever because you can't. And he totally did. So that's a story I want to redo. But the Reddit user made this story in New Orleans and involved the convent and the Ursuline nuns and the casket girls. And it's a very cool story. So I want to go over it. And that's what we're going to do tonight. We're doing the haunted ritual of Henry Beauchamp. So that's what we're going to do. Did you find it?
No, it was on Facebook when I first saw it. It's just, she's holding two up, two down, just like that thing, but I don't know where it's at now.
I hate when I see stuff on Facebook and I'm like, that's so cool. And then like, I'll try to go back to it and it'll never be found again.
I mean, more than likely I sent it to you and you probably didn't look at it because that's just the way you are.
I'll look and see. It sounds like something you would send to me. But let's go ahead and dive into this story.
Dive on in.
And I hope you guys enjoy it. It's pretty interesting. And it's storming here and lightning. So our dogs, I'm sure you can hear them in the background prancing around and just walking around. They're pacing. So let's see here. Also, y'all. You did find it. Okay. Yeah, send that to me and I will definitely get that up for you guys to see. Let's see here. So we're going to kind of start out with like the rules of the game and what you're supposed to do. And it has to be very specific. So we'll get into that and then I'll jump into the story and try to go through that with you guys. It's a fairly long story, but it is very interesting. So let's see.
Let's dive on in.
Let's
make it happen, tapping.
To the story of Henry Beauchamp.
Oh, I thought he was about to say Henry VIII.
That would be a good story, actually. In the event that you go into this one modest, grimy, one-story bar in Paris, and the correct barkeep is behind the counter that night, you may have the capacity to see an exceptionally selective display show of the lost works of one Henry Beauchamp. Be that as it may, to get in, you need to demonstrate your aficionado of the craftsman to get in. You'll be asked in clear and immaculate English, what might want to share of this great night? And you must answer, absinthe, regardless. Some other drink from bourbon to water will execute you as you rest. The following inquiry will respect the sort, and you must answer one of the two things. The stuff that man himself couldn't stand or take, or the well done, the best stuff. If you request some other absinthe in some other way, you will be tormented by bad dreams for 13 days. Every night's fantasy will be more terrible than the last, until upon the 13th dream, your bad dream will tell you each snapshot of your waking and resting life. Try not to attempt and cheat the bartender. The entryway bolted behind you. You need to drink what he gives you, fate or not. That such an intense man conceded you gathering of people ought to be sufficient. In addition, I've heard that the withering complimented his beverages in their final breaths. On the off chance that you make it that far before fixing your destiny, the barkeep will state, make certain you handle this with mind. This is the finest I have. From here, you may complete one of two things. Say, word for word, I overestimated my backbone and I offer you great eve. On the off chance that the bartender gestures, you may leave the entryway you entered safe and with nothing picked up and nothing lost, aside from the time spent. or on the other hand, you can go on. You will be given a glass with a 7-sided edge, with each side winding carefully around the bowl until framing a smooth and basic handle. You will likewise get an exceptionally extraordinary absinthe spoon in the state of a key. The openings that the keys best fill in as the depleting point for the liquor to pour over the sugar 3D square. What's more, obviously, a plain container stripped long back of its mark pieces of paper adhering to its side, shrouded in the spoil of the decades past. The spoon is totally level, however, has 2 unmistakable sides, one with a section along the pole of the key and one without. Turn the pole down so its furrow will be looking down. In the event that you endeavor this face up, your absinthe will taste foul. Your nose will consume and your eyes will wither in their attachments with unspeakable destinations not of this world. Presently, if your spoon is the correct far up, start setting up the absinthe as one would. Put the sugar on the spoon and pour the liquor over so it picks up its shading and extraordinary characteristics. Say cheers to your companion, the bartender, and bottoms up. In the event that you don't, the absinthe will consume each interdict contacts with the power of agony of sulfuric corrosive. In the event that you've done it right, the official diminished lights will go off and haziness will expend the bar. Try not to be anxious. The haziness is a sign that you've been affirmed for the display. Endure the haziness and keep quiet as the dead or the barkeep will choose to make you so. In the long run, not very long, a few minutes, a green floodlight will sparkle splendidly on an entryway on the most distant mass of the bar. The bar will be washed in green, and not simply from the floodlight. Minimal luminescent circles will delicately float through the room, and the bartender will never again be there, nor some other assuming supporter inside previously. There's no risk by this point. Think of it as a protected point. On the off chance that you didn't complete the absinthe, you don't need to. However, you may require the liquor. In any case, take the spoon and place it in the keyhole of the green-lit entrance's doorknob. It will fit impeccably and achieve the finish of the keyhole with a resonating snap. Inside is a little lift with the most wonderful lady any mortal eyes can envision, showered in the green sparkle and simply such an edge to the point that the light refracts past her into the state of wings. The green fairy herself will ask you, going up, and considering all the inconvenience you experience, it would just bode well to say yes. Presently, you have one more obstacle to clear. She will ask you, as you go too far from the bar to the compartment, how might you contrast Beauchamp's surrealism with that of, say, René Magritte? For your answer, you should state, I've come to see more than craftsmanship this evening. In the event that you don't, the green floodlight will victory. The entryways will hammer close, and the lift will dive through an apparently unending darkness before a ray of light becomes brighter as the lift nears the plane of hell. Presently, if your lift starts to go up, the green light will likewise blur, yet in its place will be the cool sparkle of the moon. In any case, before you even remember it, the lift will achieve the highest point. Presently, I'm not as beyond any doubt about this as the rest, but rather I've heard that if the green fairy kisses you on the cheek as she leaves the lift, you will be dependably honored with an inventive motivation, a lasting, consistently evolving muse. You can't ask her, you can't kiss her, she needs to do it on her own. If not, well, nothing, but rather no motivation to do it at any rate, and outrage the lady who is in charge of protecting the Beauchamp campuses for such a large number of years. You will enter from the lift, a turn-of-the-century parlor with the vast blurb of Henry Beauchamp on the left, half of the contrary divider on the privilege is an entryway. Setting aside the opportunity to peruse the blurb is a genuine, if I could talk, a genuinely smart thought as it clarifies the plain essentialness of Mr. Beauchamp. He was battling surrealists in the 1920s, continually influencing craftsmanship to attempt to be free of all intention and figured out how to do such. After one night, in a modest, dirty, one-story bar in Paris, he started to paint designs. To begin with, it was geometric examples. At that point, finished fractals. At that point, pictures that would be in the daily paper the following day. At that point, 1 week from now. At that point, 50 years prior, 100 later on, and 200 before. At that point, on his last night of life, he abducted 3 young ladies from their homes around evening time, killed them, and painted his finest magnum opuses in reds and yellows with the blood and the bile of virgins. These are behind the entryway.
You look fine on those nowadays.
Right. The initial 6 from the left appear from left to right. The beginning of the universe, the main genuine look of God as perceptible to the eyes of man, the genuine picture of Jesus Christ, the sprawling billows of heaven, each pope from the first to faces not yet unmistakable, and a representation of Jesus' appearance in his second coming. The other 6 on the right appear from appropriate to left, the disastrous of the universe, the main genuine look of Satan as distinguishable as the eyes of man, the genuine picture of Judas, the sprawling flares of hell, each human epitomized evil spirit from the first to faces not yet unmistakable, and a representation of the Antichrist in his second coming. Presently, 6 and 6 makes 12. Be that as it may, what of the 13th? The 13th painted is pivoted on a divider stick, the picture confronting the divider. The space around it is restricted up at a wide distance across, and under the flip picture is a sign in 3 dialects. The best is in the sacred writings of the seraphim, the base in the runes of the most astounded wicked requests, and in the center is Roman letters. It says, "Do not touch." Presently, similar to the kiss, I can't state this part with such sureness. However, all the same, I heard that some way or another, as he kicked the bucket, Beauchamp excoriated his skin, his organs, his exceptionally soul in some kind of montage. How he took his dead body and made such a horrendous perfect work of art, I would never say, nor would I ever set out to. He committed suicide instantly in the wake of the painting, precisely 13 of these. So, basically he flayed his skin and used it on his last painting, and as soon as the painting was done, he committed suicide.
Damn.
Yeah. But, if you got in there, and I'm asking you, because you have to pass all these tests to get to this room of paintings that sound incredible, like the 12 of them sound incredible to see. It's the last one that he used, the blood and the vial or bile of virgins and his own skin that's turned around facing the wall. Do you turn it around so you can see it?
Nope.
Nope. Yeah, I feel like it's facing the wall for a certain reason, so I think I might leave it.
Yeah, people just need to quit messing with shit. Quit digging up sarcophagus and finding 10,000-year-old mask in the water. Just leave that shit alone. We've got enough going on.
We've got too much going on.
We don't need any more plagues or damn whatever there is out there.
All right. So I know that was kind of confusing, but now we have a Redditor that rewrote the story.
What?
A Redditor. They rewrote the story, and they put a little bit more detail in it, and they made it in where it's in New Orleans. And it's a lot easier to understand, and I love how they did it. And we'll read some of it if it gets to the point where it's just a lot, because it is a very long story. We can always continue it or come back to it another time. But I really did enjoy it when I was reading it. I thought it was very interesting, the take on what this person was saying. And I also like the fact that the original is in Paris, so they made this one in New Orleans. So let's jump into this. And this story is called The Gallery, and it's by J Digital 1983. And I just really love this, and I hope you guys do too. Clive walked down the dimly lit street in the French Quarter. Garbage was strewn through the gutters, and small green puddles of water accumulated in the ancient paving. His worn shoes echoed off the sidewalks and intensified the lonely feeling of deserted Ursulines Avenue. It was a few minutes before 3 in the morning, and he could hear the faint noise from the bars on Bourbon a few blocks away. However, the echoing shouts and drunken jubilance of strangers no longer offered him a vague assurance of the existence of the outside world. He knew very well that he had crossed over into someplace else this evening. The veil separating the undulating crowds and himself had been drawn tight. A gentle autumn breeze briefly made a halo of his cigarette smoke and whipped at his smartly cut dark hair as it wound down the empty street. He drew the last of the life from his cigarette and flipped it into the many questionable puddles in the gutter. Finally, after 6 years of searching, he had found himself here. He took a right on Charters. I don't know how you say this. It's a street in New Orleans, so don't hate me, Louisiana, because I love you guys. And walked along the large concrete wall outlining the convent's grounds. As he walked, he looked up the large building that housed the convent of the Ursuline nuns decades ago. Not a single light was on. It was merely an office and a museum now. Most of the time it was. On a certain night out of the year, a rare opportunity presented itself in the centuries-old convent. And you may remember this. It had taken Clive the better part of a decade, but he had finally claimed the knowledge that would allow him to enter the hidden gallery. His gaze shifted to the closed shutters of the attic and the blessed nails keeping them shut. He thought of the fate of those poor women centuries ago as he walked deeper into the cool autumn night. As he passed the steps in front of the old St. Mary's, his nerves finally got the better of him. He paused for a moment to steel his will. This was no time for his courage to falter. He had read of the two girls in the 70s that had not known the proper steps of the ritual and had failed at the doorman. Their bodies were found drained of blood on the steps in front of the building. Remember that part?
Yes.
But it wasn't because of that, y'all. When we did the story, it was paranormal investigators or vampire hunters or whatever. They wanted to see if the shutters opened, because they were supposed to. They're usually nailed shut. They fell asleep and the shutters opened, but you couldn't see what it was. And they were found the next day drained of all their blood. Many people believe it was the Ursuline vampire that came out and got them. And we'll do another story on that, because when we did it, it was very new, so it wasn't very good anyway. So I would love to redo that story and give it its justice. Okay, so he approached a small wall between St. Mary's and the next building and knocked sharply 3 times. His knocks were returned 3 times. A voice questioned him. "What do you seek here?" "The light of pure art," Clive responded. "Very well." The wall squeaked and rumbled lightly. It was opened inward and Clive was allowed to pass. His inquirer was nowhere to be seen. The passage was dark and shadowed by the buildings on each side, but a few feet down, he saw a faint light streaming from underneath the door. Upon reaching it, he found the door unlocked. Once he entered, he found a worn, fully stocked bar complete with bartender and various other patrons obscured in the surrounded booths. He took the appropriate seat at the bar. "What shall you be partaking in this night?" the bartender asked. His eyes sparkled warmly as he spoke. "Absinthe," Clive said, nervously clearing his throat. "Absinthe, please." "What kind would you prefer, sir?" the bartender shot back. "The stuff the man himself could not bear to take," Clive said slowly, making sure he got the words right. "Ah," breathed the bartender. "One moment, then." The bartender quickly ducked into a back room behind the bar, and on his return, he was carrying an ancient-looking green glass bottle. A thick layer of dust covered the bottle, and its label had long since been reduced to shreds. "Be sure you handle this drink with care," the bartender warned, as he poured the dark green liquid into a crystal glass with an ornate 7-sided rim. "For it is the best I have." When the bartender finished pouring half the drink, he placed an oddly shaped absinthe spoon on top of the glass and a sugar cube in the middle of the spoon. His job completed. The bartender placed a small glass of ice water on the bar next to Clive. As he looked closer at the spoon, he recognized the shape as a key. "Good," he thought, "I may survive the night." Clive poured the ice water over the sugar slowly until the cube was no more and then stirred the glass gently with the key-shaped spoon. The liquid became cloudy. He removed the spoon key and placed it on the bar. After appreciating the beverage and glass for a few moments, he offered a nervous cheers to the bartender and downed the liquid, closing his eyes fully to enjoy what could be his last drink. It was strong, herby, and sweet. A premium absinthe. His knowledge of the ritual went no further than this. Whatever else that lay before him was from the whispers of madmen and facts that had no place in their shadow. He opened his eyes and found utter darkness. He blinked. He thought maybe he was only supposed to have taken a small sip. As the horrors of possibility ravaged his mind, he began to notice a faint green glow. At first, he dismissed it as a trick of a brain deprived of visual stimulus, but it steadily grew brighter. Eventually, he could faintly see the bar again and noticed that he was alone. Green orbs of light flickered in existence and drew his attention to an old wooden door in the corner of the bar. Upon finding the spoon key again, he picked it up and slid off his bar stool, making his way carefully to the door in the darkness. He looked at the door and he found the keyhole in the center, and it appeared his spoon key would fit. The door resounded with a loud mechanical snap as the key found its place in the lock. Clive tried to retrieve the key, but it was stuck fast in the machinery now. The door slowly slid open to reveal the innards of a modern elevator and a beautiful woman bathed in the green glow. He was stunned at her beauty. "You've kept me waiting," she said slyly, winking a coy smile. He was bewitched. She motioned him closer with a gesture of a finger. He joined her in the elevator. She was tall and blonde with a slight frame covered with a billowy translucent dress. The elevator door... The elevator machinery clicked and whirred as the carriage began to rise upward. She smiled, and it warmed him. Soon, they reached their destination. The elevator door slid open to a great marbled hall. Lamps lit with an unnatural flame cast a perfect light of clarity on the works that hung there. He was awestruck. It was Beauchamp's gallery. According to legend, this should be the attic of the convent, yet it was so large that it couldn't rationally occupy the same space. The woman leaned over and placed a kiss on his cheek and motioned for him to exit the elevator. He did so as cautiously and politely as he could. Upon stepping forward into the grand hall, Claude found a large bronze plaque laid into one of the grand marble columns in the center of the hall. It detailed the history and importance of Henri Beauchamp, the artist whose gallery in which he now stood. The plaque read, "Look upon these works with the reverence, for there is none other like them in the worlds of man and God." The stories told to Clive suggested that Henri Beauchamp started as a poor artist that immigrated to New Orleans from his home in France around 1732. His art was mediocre at the time, but the way of life he experienced in the colony granted him inspiration and his art greatly improved. Soon, after becoming mildly popular in the colony, his affair with absinthe started. He became known for consuming large quantities while working, and the abuse of the drink granted his artwork a new form of profound surrealism. He soon became infamous for his surrealist paintings, and most of the community didn't know what to think of his paintings, as this was well before the modern surrealist movement. The more superstitious citizens began to speculate Beauchamp had sold his soul to the devil. After the ridicule and suspicion his new style of painting attracted, he sank into depression. During the Depression, he began painting in modern mathematical fractals and soon showed even more complex designs. Soon, he started producing painted depictions of events a few days and a few weeks into the future. His health degraded rapidly as he seldom ate and mainly drank absinthe, only sparsely drinking fresh water by itself. It appeared that soon either madness or death would claim him entirely. Close to 3 in the morning on October 10, 1736, Henri Beauchamp broke into the convent of the Ursuline nuns and garroted the 3 remaining casket girls still under the nuns' care. Beauchamp used the fluid and material of their virgin bodies to create the masterpiece works housed in this gallery. Skin stretched masterfully for canvas, blood, bile, other body fluids extracted and mixed expertly for paints. Something in the act itself bent the attic into how it was now a marbled gallery. When his work with the casket girls was complete, he became part of it himself. Using an unknown method, Henri Beauchamp used his own body and soul as materials to create his final work. The process of this creation effectively binding him to his work and to his gallery for all of eternity. Clive swallowed. He was very nervous. There were 6 paintings along the wall there and 6 paintings on the other side. Each painting was about 4.5 feet tall and 4 feet wide, and their framing appeared to have been carved out of pale bone. They were divided along the wall by 6 marble columns, first bearing the plaque Clive had seen earlier. He approached the 6 paintings and noted the engraving installed below the painting. It read, "The only true visage of God, viewable to the eyes of man." The painting itself was masterful beyond anything Clive had ever seen. The colors Beauchamp had achieved weren't limited to the reds, browns, and yellows he had expected. Somehow the entire spectrum had been represented. He moved to the 2nd painting. The engraving identified it as the Genesis of the Universe. The portrayal of the fabled event achieved incredible details. Clive could have stared at this painting forever, but he had to move on. The 3rd painting identified itself as the true visage of Jesus Christ. Clive smiled at the pleasure he felt. Jesus didn't look like a hippie. The 4th painting was titled, "The Sprawling Clouds of Heaven." Clive assumed the clouds in the title had been metaphorical, as there weren't very many clouds in the depiction of heaven in the painting. The 5th painting was entitled, but depicted the lineage of popes, with the first being what Clive assumed to be St. Peter. As he got to the modern popes, he noticed there were several that surpassed the pope of this time. The 6th painting was titled, "The Second Coming of Christ," and the depiction here was once again brilliantly captured. If the painting was correct in its prediction, Clive did not look forward to that day. The image here was terrifying. When he was finished appreciating the first 6, he crossed over to the other side of the hall to appraise the other 6. The 1st painting's engraving read, "The only true visage of Satan, viewable to the eyes of man." It was similar to the first painting on the other side, and what was depicted only barely resembled a face, but what was here was twisted and bent in ways that seemed unnatural. The second painting was titled The Cataclysm of the Universe. It was just as enrapturing as its twin on the other side. Both the creation and destruction were equally as beautiful as it seemed clawed. The third painting was titled The True Visage of Judas. Clive was surprised to see that more than one face had been represented here. It seemed that it had taken more than one person to put the betrayal of Christ in motion. The fourth painting's engraving read The Sprawling Flames of Hell. Like its twin that was represented in the painting wasn't what he could call flames. The designation of the place was well represented, though. There were hundreds of kinds of torture, as there was a pale king that reigned over it from a dark, rust-colored throne. The fifth painting, also like its twin, was utilitarian. It depicted portraits of hundreds of faces, from mass murderers to tyrants. Some Clive was familiar with, like Hitler, Stalin, and Albert Fish. Others he was not. The sixth and final painting on this side was titled The Coming of the Antichrist and depicted the horrific events that were to occur before Christ's second coming. The first time that night, Clive wished that this painting had not been rendered in such terrific detail. When Clive was done, he let out a sigh, leaned against the marble. As his gaze shifted, he noticed a door towards the back of the hall that he was fairly sure he hadn't seen before. It was made of a darkly stained wood and was inlaid with gold in intricate patterns. There was no lock on it, just a regular doorknob. He came this far. Clive thought, why the hell not? He found himself in a dimly lit, medium-sized room bordered with crimson-colored satin drapes covered what he assumed were its walls. An ancient-looking gas chandelier bathed the room with weak, flickering light, and underneath the chandelier was a complex wooden stand made out of the same wood as the door. The bottom was 6 feet wide, 4 feet, and stood about 5 inches from the floor. The wood rose from the base and formed a frame-like structure which contained a canvas that had been turned to face the wall. The canvas was attached to 2 rotating bars which extended from the top of the frame to the bottom of the structure. Upon inspecting the back of the canvas, Clive was able to make out the lettering in the dim light. Towards the top of the canvas were several lines of the characters that Clive barely recognized as Enochian. Towards the bottom were characters that looked nothing like any written language he had seen. Let's see, where was I?
There's no telling.
Right in the center of the canvas were bold Roman letters instructing the viewer, "Do not touch." Curiosity seized Clive. It was like telling someone not to think of a pink elephant. Out of all the amazing things he'd seen tonight, he was now expected to conjure up some sort of self-control. It made no sense to him. From the stories he'd heard, he supposed this was Beauchamp's final masterpiece. It was Beauchamp himself, fused to his artwork. As the thought of disobeying the warning crossed his mind, he could hear a heavy breathing start from beyond the satin drapes. The drapes swayed to move in union with the in and out of the breathing. Great, now the room was breathing. One of the drapes lifted ever so slightly as a breath caught it, and behind it were what appeared to be stars. Just like Clive was looking into the night sky. Curiosity fought a good fight, but survival instinct prevailed. Clive forced himself to turn and leave the room, passing back through the door. Upon exiting, he found himself in an alley a block over from Royal. There was no sign of the gallery or the doorway he had just passed through. Tired but content, he was still alive after having witnessed the events of the night. He began to walk back through his hotel. Throughout the remaining years, Clive was never able to forget the images he had witnessed in the gallery of Henri Beauchamp. He forgot the faces and the names of lovers and friends with age, but the images remained, unfazed by time and brilliant in his mind. He turned into quite a successful artist himself and enjoyed a lucrative career as a writer of fiction. The inspiration he gleaned from that little visit had made him a legend in his own time. Clive's obituary reflected all that he'd achieved and the custom made him out to be a better person than he believed he deserved. Clive folded the paper carefully and placed it in his jacket pocket. Now, with his living years behind him and the vivid colors of life faded to muted grays and tones, Clive found himself back at the bar below the gallery once more. The now familiar face of the bartender hasn't aged like his. His eyes were still bright and his smile was just as warm. Clive had taken residence in his own booth now instead of the wobbly stools at the bar. He had earned the right to the booth through a life dedicated to art, just like Beauchamp. There were others like him there as well. Even that one rock star, the one with the dirty cardigans. Clive would never remember his name. He regretted only one thing, failing to witness Beauchamp's final masterwork. Now that he is free from the burden of life and time, maybe he can see it and really appreciate it. Maybe, he thinks. The final work wasn't meant for the eyes of the living. Maybe it was just meant for the eyes of the dead. And that was it?
Huh.
I love that.
Love it, girl.
Love it so much.
Love it.
Yes.
Get it, girl. Get it.
But yeah, those paintings sound absolutely fascinating.
Those paintings sound like something you don't want to mess with.
No, I would definitely not go through any of that. But yes, the paintings, they absolutely sound just amazing.
As a matter of fact, you know those climate activists that go around like spray painting and throwing milk and butter on paintings?
Yes.
I would point those paintings out to those people.
But yes, I hope I didn't bore you guys too much. I just think
you were kind of boring tonight.
I'm sorry.
Your voice is just irritating as hell. But guys, I told her she needed to shave her ass the other night and I woke up bald.
What are you saying over here? Oh my gosh, you are so weird.
It's late. I'm tired.
But yes, you guys, we have had several people write in and let us know some stories they would like to hear. So we're going to start jumping on that next week and get the stories out that you guys are wanting to hear. We have some really fun ones coming up.
I want a fun one.
One that I had never heard of. One that I had been debating on for a while about doing. And since y'all let us know y'all wanted to hear it, we're going to do it. So y'all stick with us and thank you for listening tonight. We will see y'all next week.
Wait, you didn't tell them.
What?
To stay hydrated.
That's right. You must stay hydrated.
Listen, drink plenty of water, stay hydrated, and don't come out until October 31st. You're good.
And make good choices. All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.